Welcome again to Whiskey Congress. Nice once again, Steve, to be in the studio together.
Sure enough.
Done that a couple times in a row. It's been kind of weird in a good way.
Yep.
Speaking of weird, but not in such a good way, we've got the whole North Korea situation. So not to jump
Getting right into it.
No pleasantries.
How's your weekend
going? You know what? How about this? We're still finishing our Cleveland whiskey, our Black Cherry Cleveland whiskey. Good stuff.
Right. And part of that, is that we have decided, we travel a lot, both of us, so it's not, it's a little difficult to get in studio to do this together as much, so that slows us down on, you know, individual bottles that we take down.
True.
But I think, you know, we want to make sure that we're delivering a quality show to our listeners, you know, every week, so we've tried to keep from getting too schlobberknockered while we're talking about
was a bit worse.
Right, yeah, we definitely had some on, you know, Steve and Jim Fix the World, we had some moments where we both just kind of got out of hand. So, you know, working on cleaning that up, and so that's a good thing.
That is a good thing.
But definitely still working on the Cleveland Underground, the Cleveland Whiskey Underground, which is just
I love it.
Phenomenal.
Fantastic phenomenal whiskey.
It's probably not going to make it to the end of this show.
Oh, no, it's not.
But, you know, and then, you know, next week we'll have a new bottle.
You want to stick with this? I'd like to go to the hickory, maybe.
No, I think actually we're going to go a whole new direction. I think we're going to go away from bourbon and come back with the scotch.
Okay.
Come back with the scotch. I got one in mind.
Be revealed.
Yeah.
Okay, on the to be revealed
right.
discussion. So we've talked on recent shows about when you say, or I guess when either of us say the expression at the end of the day, there needs to be a consequence for that.
Mm. That's a good thing. That's a good thing to bring up.
So
what we're going to do, listeners, people listening, we are going to put a Twitter poll up and on what our basically our shot or our drink of death.
The punishment drink, yes.
Right. Our shot or drink of death will be. I think we're going to go with White Zinfandel because neither of us are a
fan.
That's
revolting, yes.
Drambuie.
Okay, that's pretty awful.
And
what about Jägermeister, though? Because to me, that's worse than... In terms of me getting stupid, my worst moments were Jägermeister.
Well...
You think Drambuie is more disgusting than...
I mean, the taste. Drambuie, right, the taste right. of Drambuie is just awful. You know, I mean, we could do a Rusty Nail where we do the whole thing with Drambuie and Johnny Walker Red. And just,
oh, God, I've never even heard of that. It's called a Rusty Nail?
It's called a Rusty Nail.
That sounds like an appropriate
name. And I feel like drinking it maybe actually gives you tetanus. Like,
but you need a tetanus shot.
Right, like you may need a tetanus shot after.
Right.
But the third can, I was thinking something malty, maybe like a Smirnoff Ice or... Mike's Hard Lemonade.
So we'll put it out there. We'll give our listeners a
right.
chance to respond.
So that's so
the idea of having to get through a whole, like, I get thrown on a shot of some pretty awful stuff. A whole Mike's Hard Lemonade.
So sweet.
Oh,
I'd have to have my insulin pen here. No, I'm thinking it'll be. Yeah, I'm thinking it's got to be. So those are going to be. We're going to settle. Those are going to be the choices. White Zinfandel, Drambuie, or.
An alternative beverage.
Right. Smirnoff Ice or Mike's Hard Lemonade or whatever awfulness we can find, you know, in the lightweight section.
So that's the punishment for either of us saying.
Well, it's me.
The day,
I'm pretty bad with it. You don't really say it that often.
I do more than I wish I did, but not as much as you. But is it also, if I ever say N-word and don't actually man up and say the word, see? that you called me out on that.
Right. Well, so, I mean, I say at the end of the day, nearly every show, probably twice a show.
Yes.
So I think the consequences are a lot worse for me here. So we, you know, let's choose wisely.
All right. Well,
That being said, the administrative stuff out of the way. Let's
also go with, we are whiskeycongress.com on almost every social media. We're at Whiskey Congress. So there's all that administrative stuff. So there, done.
It's nice and simple.
Right.
Right. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Twitter followers are growing. We appreciate it. You know, have some pretty fun engagement there. Some people not so pleasant. Some people are very funny.
Yeah, you've had a few brawls. I usually come in at the end. I'm like, okay, maybe I'll just put something nice and this will go away.
Which
annoys you.
It annoys me and it confuses me because I'm like, wait, did I type that?
That seems peaceful.
Although there was a weird one where it wasn't weird. I don't want to call anybody out for being weird, but you know, you have that disappearing plane, that plane that disappeared. They're pretty sure it crashed. The Malaysian flight MH, what is it, 730? I want to make sure
I get it right. I won't be able to help you with that.
So the plane disappears, and they found a piece of it, and you know, it popped up in the news this week, and someone pointed it out, and it came up, and I think I retweeted it and just made a little bit of a note on it, and this at Gloom and Doom One said, "Flight MH370 abducted by aliens into another dimension. Flight pattern shows this is no crash scenario." And they were retweeting our, you know, our story we had posted, and I had to read it a couple times. Abducted by aliens into another dimension. Flight pattern shows that this was no crash scenario. So the last part I definitely can get on board with. That I don't know flight patterns. I'm not an air traffic controller. I don't know a lot about it. I also don't know much about aliens, and I am not very familiar with additional dimensions that may exist.
I watched Species the other day.
I'm not opposed to any of this. I don't think you are either.
I don't feel qualified to.
But I just don't feel qualified to give an analysis on it. But I thought it was an interesting take on that story, and so, I wanted to share it.
So thank you.
At Gloom and Doom.
Thank you, Gloom and Doom.
Thank you very much for that input. And hey, all right. Who knows? Maybe they're right.
And you know what? Gloom and Doom does transition us to our current situation.
As does aliens.
As do aliens.
And
yeah.
Living in another dimension, which is Kim Jong-un and President Donald Trump.
Yeah. So, all right. I mean, most people by now know what's gone on. North Korea and Donald Trump continue to battle back and forth in the media and on Twitter. North Korea is now saying they're saying that they have the ability to put a nuclear warhead on one of their missiles, and they're going to do a nuclear test towards Guam, and their only way to deal with Donald Trump is a show of force. Donald Trump has said if you do that there will be fire and fury, and he's not exactly handled this in the most diplomatic fashion, but it is tough to be diplomatic with a lunatic.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't think that the there's a lot of things we can go after Donald Trump for in terms of how he's handled the presidency to this point. I'm not as much concerned about what he said. You know, fire, fury. You know, it's gonna listen, because if he had said it to Vladimir Putin, that's one thing. If he would have said it to the leader of China, that's one thing. Saying it to Kim Jong-un, that's another thing. Part of it is, and I know we've had discussions about this, and I've said, you know, you have to go after him, you have to wipe him out. But looking at this realistically, analytically, from a socio-political and from a warfare standpoint, I think, one, you probably do need to talk tough with them. But what is your thought process on the true prospects of North Korea actually having the capabilities, one, having a nuclear warhead, having the ability to get it miniaturized, having the ability to get it on a missile, and a missile that can actually make it with a nuclear warhead from their shores to California?
I mean, to California, in my mind, the distance that I would have to travel and the likelihood that we could shoot it down are very high. The distance I would have to travel with any accuracy and the likelihood that we could shoot it down, I'm not particularly afraid of an attack on the U.S. mainland.
Right.
Now, there's one thing that I believe, and I think I've said it to you on the air, but maybe I haven't, is I hear on the CNNs and the Fox News all the time that, you know, Kim Jong-un is looking for...
By the way, you didn't answer my question.
Okay, what was the question? Do I think they can do it?
Do they actually have a nuclear weapon?
I'm not comfortable saying no.
I'm not comfortable saying yes.
Well, but there's one. If you say yes and you're wrong, then they don't have it. If you say bet, no, if you bet no when you're wrong and they have it, you can get fucked fast. Yeah. So this is where you err on the side of caution, I think. But the one thing I keep hearing and I'm really uncomfortable with is people say, you know, he's doing this to manipulate the politics. He's doing this for whatever reason.
Trump or
No, Kim Jong-un. Okay. Kim Jong-un. I don't know. When Kim Jong-un says things like, you know, we will rain fire, whatever he said, you know, turn Seoul into a sea of fire, you know, do these things. I'm not particularly afraid of their capabilities. At least if I was in Seoul, I would be. But just because it's so close. But I don't know what his reality button is like. So, like when Saddam Hussein said during the Gulf War, you know, the Americans will impale themselves on our whatever, Saddam Hussein knew he was fucked. He might have been a revolting scumbag, I mean, essentially an organized criminal with a military, but he was sane. He knew reality. He knew he could not defeat the American armed forces. While I have no doubt the American armed forces can smoke North Korea in days, I don't know if Kim Jong-un knows that. And the amount of damage he could do in a short period of time, especially with an initial strike, whether it's to America or Seoul.
Or Tokyo. I mean, like, the real issues are Seoul, Tokyo, Beijing, Guam.
And Guam.
Right?
Like, and those, Guam is the worst choice for him, right?
Right.
Because economically, you don't hurt any. Sorry, Guam. I have no reason to speak poorly of you. But if most Americans.
Haven't we had a listener in Guam?
You know what? We might have.
I'm pretty sure we did.
As the old show, I think we did have
a new show. No, on the new show we did.
Do we really?
Yeah, we can track through.
All right, well, there's ways to track this. We care.
But, no,
you see what I'm saying, though?
I do.
Does he know he's going to lose? Because he's been brought up being told he's a descendant of a god. I mean, he is Xerxes without the abs.
Right,
you know, 300 reference there,
and not 700 feet tall,
and Xerxes without the all that other stuff,
right.
But he probably still gets laid as much as Xerxes, given the fact that he's in that.
Oh,
probably does.
I know, just the thought of it is bizarre
for you and
I.
For
just most I don't know, asking. And having watched some weird stuff on the internet, I don't know. I figured there might be mayonnaise involved.
Moving on.
I'll show you later. I think. I think that you're right. Like, what is Un's reality button? And my bigger, I guess my thing is this is what frustrates me. Why don't we have a better idea of what's going on in North Korea? Like, so many places we have an idea of what's going on, but for some reason we can't get into North Korea, and I feel like, and I'm sure, I know that we're trying. I know that we have satellites. But for whatever reason, we just don't have good intel on the ground.
I mean, it's probably tough. You're trying.
Yeah, I mean, it's a horrible from a logistical setup, right? That North Korea, it's a peninsula, right?
Yes.
We've discussed island, and you almost got a pin through your neck, but you were 600 miles away. the peninsula I know is very mountainous.
Right.
I've never been there, but I mean, I guess it's got mountains, trees. So it seems like you're not going to do a flyover and get a great visual, but you have to wonder.
We've got satellites, but
right.
But Steve, satellites detect what? Have you ever seen let me encourage anyone who's not seen this. Maybe you have, I'm guessing you have seen a nighttime satellite photo of the Korean Peninsula.
No.
It's amazing. You can tell where the borders are based on the lack of technology and lights. So literally, South Korea glows like it's Manhattan.
Right.
North Korea, jet black with a huge bright spot where Pyongyang is, and like one other city that's got some activity, and then essentially nothing, and then the China border, which is lighted again. It is stark. I mean, I'll show it to you after the show, and I'll encourage people just Google Korean Peninsula night satellite, and it is amazing. They have Pyongyang, if you are with the in crowd, is probably great. And unfortunately, that's probably 1% of their population. Everyone else is literally starving with no, you know, people say, do they have the internet there? I don't care if they have the internet. They don't have electricity.
They don't have, like, do they have food?
No, they don't have food. They're, they're a starving population.
I do know that, I mean, China sends them a great deal. Like, I know 90-95% of their oil, of North Korea's oil, comes from China. Like 80% of their food or 90% of their food comes from China.
Right.
So in reality, right, like to really deal with this, China is the one who has to deal with this. Right. China puts the pressure on them, China can say, listen, Kim, buddy, hey, listen, we've let you rant, we've let you rave, we've let you throw your little temper tantrum. You need to reel it in, or you're not going to have oil and you're not going to have food.
And again, that's dependent on his reality button, right?
It's, well, you know what? But still, even if his reality button is completely off, you still have to do that. You still have to give him fair warning.
Oh, yeah.
And then you actually do it. And once you do that, even if his reality button is off, you cut off oil and gas, and they don't have fuel to move tanks or jeeps or anything else. You cut off food, so you can't feed your soldiers. You can't feed your people. Now they're not only, I mean, you're hurting the people there, but you're also crippling the military.
Right? Well, all right, so you need to make that distinction, because I don't think Kim Jong Un gives a fuck about the people. I think he's proven that. Nor did his father.
Right.
They basically said,
I understand, but this, I'm thinking strictly from a strategic standpoint. You do the sanctions, you put on like very severe sanctions, no oil, no food, cut it off from China. Because no one else is really giving them anything.
So there's an author named Michael Malice, and I listened to him do an interview on Rogan's podcast talking about North Korea. And he basically said that the North Korean government has left such a vacuum in many ways that there's a ton of black markets out there. And that's what drives food now. And there's like this battle between the black markets and the government, where you used to be able to bribe your way across borders and get stuff done. I mean, it's such a murky mess. I'm sorry for giving such vague answers, but I don't know.
Well,
can you get oil through a black market blockade?
You're not going to be able to get enough to fuel.
To matter? Probably true.
To matter. That's, and my point, and so, the point that I'm making is, you cut off those lifelines of support, you know, fuel and food, right? Fuel for the machines, food for the bodies. You now have stunted their military's ability to really move in any formidable fashion. So at that point in time, you've weakened their military, and then you say, all right, now what are you going to do, Kim Jong-un? Right, so now he's left. If he does have nuclear, then he's basically only left with the nuclear option and the inability to defend himself.
Well, then, I mean, but the nuclear option is a scary thing, right?
It's a horribly scary thing. So then you see what he does. What does he do? Right, like you basically have to back him into a corner to see what he does, and then you have to be on alert. It's a listen. How else are you going to deal with this?
I don't know.
We can't preemptively strike them.
No.
Right.
No.
We can't continue to pussyfoot around this. So that's the, listen. Everyone wants to say that, you know, like, not everyone, but you know, Trump's our guy. Okay, then this situation has been dealt with kid gloves for the last 30 years, and you know, it's really come to a head now because of the nuclear aspect. Right, over the last 15 years.
I mean, they used to do missile tests during the Obama and Bush administrations, and we'd be like, yeah, and it went 25 miles and crashed into the sea. You executed a couple military scientists.
But here's the thing. Nuclear technology is not easy to develop.
Right? Correct.
It takes a fair amount of time, and it takes a fair amount of technology that you would need to have in place. So the question is, you know, where, like you said, they don't have lights. You know, they don't have lights, but they have the
outside of Pyongyang,
right? But still, it still takes a lot to put together a nuclear weapon, right? One, so we're like, we have to push the fact that I'm not so convinced that they went from nothing to something that quickly. But if they did, I still think that you need to back them into a diplomatic corner and really force his hand and see what, let's, you don't know what his reality button is? Fine.
I don't.
Let's find out. push them into a corner, cut off the gas, but, cut off the food.
I mean, look, I understand what you're saying, and I'm not claiming I've got the answers.
And the UN just imposed sanctions on them that were relatively harsh. But again, it doesn't matter because China is supplying them with pretty much everything that they need.
And,
anyway.
And that's why I brought up the black market situation is if the people in power can get what they want. I mean, I don't even want to call it the administration of Kim Jong-un. It's more the monarchy or the dictatorship, right? I mean, it's
I'm not sure why it matters what we call it.
Just because they can probably get what it takes to keep them in hookers and blow, for lack of a better term.
But it's still...
And a missile's a missile, right? That missile is armed and ready to go. If they've got 5 or 10 or 20 or 50 missiles and... 3 of them have nuclear warheads. They can do a lot of damage.
They can do a lot of damage.
I mean, if they shoot one at Los Angeles, one at Tokyo, and one at Seoul, and shoot five other missiles at each that don't have warheads, if one of those connects, we lost. Even if we annihilate North Korea's military capacity, chop the head off the snake, so to speak, we've still lost the exchange, right? I mean, if Tokyo gets turned into Nagasaki circa 1945, the world suffers dramatically.
It does, but what it does. And
so I'm not how do you stop? How do you stop it? Is the question?
But like, I mean, do we? So this, we're just going to continue to do this.
Here's what we shouldn't. Here's what bothers me the most. Right now, we've got Kim Jong-un sending his messages saying, we cannot be pushed around by this tyrant, Donald Trump. And Donald Trump saying, we're going to, you know, bring fire and fury upon them if they say things.
I'm not worried about Donald Trump.
I am.
Donald Trump has General Mattis. He's got John Kelly. He's got plenty of people that will literally...
If you're in Seoul, Korea right now, how do you feel about Donald Trump?
It doesn't matter. Who cares? That's not the conversation.
All right.
I mean, like, it's not the conversation at all. The conversation, you're saying, well, you know, Kim Jong-un is saying this, Donald Trump is saying this. What Donald Trump says literally does not matter, right? It doesn't matter because, one, like, he said a lot of things, and the amount of action that we've seen on these things has been null, right? And with this, with the nuclear thing, I don't care what you say. I don't care, oh, well, he's Donald Trump and he's the president. If he says go, whatever. You mean to tell me you don't think that General Mattis wouldn't walk into his office and say, you're not doing that?
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is he could back Kim Jong-un into a corner where he feels like his only option is throw the Hail Mary and shoot missiles at the places I mentioned.
Kim Jong-un
won't?
No. Trump won't. Trump's going to talk his talk, but... what fixes this is pressure from China. China has done absolutely dick about this situation from the beginning. What solves this problem, because we're about solutions, right? Steve and Jim fix the world.
Well, we're no longer there.
We're going to fix it by saying China put the right amount of pressure on him to make him feel the pain.
Here's where we disagree. I know what you're saying. My concern is that if you do that and... he is the delusional maniac that I fear that he is. That his response to that...
if he's a delusional maniac, then it doesn't matter. If he's a delusional maniac, it doesn't matter.
If you push a delusional maniac into a corner, what do they do?
Even if he's a delusional maniac, even if you don't, he could still do something fucking delusional and crazy.
He still could. But if you force the hand of someone who literally feels like they have nothing to lose and they might actually
win.
He's
sitting there firing missiles right now. The problem is that the missiles suck.
All right. Well, they've gotten, I mean, not to encourage this, but they've gotten better, right? Their missiles used to suck. They used to blow up 25 feet away. Now they've launched a few successful missiles.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Right? Like that. He's still going through this exercise, right? Whether you sanction him or not,
first of all, I'm not anti-sanctions. I'm just saying I'm not convinced that solves the problem, and I don't know what does.
Okay, but you have to do something, right?
You have to do something. I mean,
so you're not giving me a solution.
You're right.
And
I don't know.
What I'm saying is somebody at some point in time has to commit to a solution. Someone, and I think it needs to be China because they could have the biggest impact on them.
That aspect I totally agree with. I just don't know. We're not dealing with a... China, I don't know, gives us a long-term strategy. I don't think regime change is easy at all. I think you've got a population that believes that their glorious leader, whatever the fuck they call him, is literally descendant of a god. And as silly as that sounds to us, if you're brought up believing that shit, it sticks in your head. There are things about North Korea that I don't know which way to go. I don't know if the population knows better, and if they get stuff through, you know, internet and whatever that we don't know about.
There's a portion of the, because remember, South Korea is right across the way. There are a lot of people. There's a lot of family on either side of the border,
but they can't communicate.
They can't not openly and freely, but I'm sure there is some. I'm sure there's multiple factions of the North Korean.
So during the Soviet bloc dynasty, as oppressive as they were, there was underground communications. There were underground media, for lack of a better word.
Always.
And good. I don't know if that exists in North Korea. I don't know if I don't know if there is the network capability and or the inflow of information to make it happen. Maybe it's there. I hope it is.
To make what happen?
To make people understand that, hey, there's this whole world out there that doesn't worship this guy with his goofy haircut and meaning Kim Jong-un, not Donald Trump. Steve,
to make that.
And I did, didn't I? Because no, you didn't know for sure.
Didn't. So, and that's why I can't even say anything. It's just like
And that's why I'm so freaked out right now is because Clinton, Bush, Obama. Okay, the situation was still fucked up. You still had this whatever. Now we've got a guy who acts very impulsively, talks very impulsively, meaning Trump, I don't think it's beyond the pale to say he could push another very simple thinker, meaning Kim Jong-un, into taking a drastic action that would most likely fail.
Okay, but hold on. You're off track here.
All right, tell me.
If I told you I can reel him in, I can reel Donald Trump in and get him to shut up. And just, you know what? You say... as little as possible, just let us handle it, okay? Let Steve and Jim handle it, right? I don't even know if I want you on this train because I don't know what the fuck you're talking about right now. There, people don't know what's going on, and he's impulsive.
I'm standing
and
by
he's
that.
A deity of a god, okay. Like, okay, whatever.
It makes you feel better.
So, but
I'm drinking more whiskey. What do you think?
Fine. So,
could bring wisdom.
My thing is, again, to solve the problem, if I can get Donald Trump to shut up, right? Just say what you have to say as a president. Like, listen, you can't, like, because I think even if Obama were in office, if Kim Jong-un were doing what he's doing right now, he would have to respond and say, listen, you know, if you're going to threaten us, then we're going to respond. If you're going to misbehave, then you're going to have to deal with the consequences of that. Now, Donald Trump's specific word choice, not good, you know, but it's still the same response that any president would give in that situation. Right, I mean, like, in North Korea has been pushing the envelope since before the election, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
So, I mean, any president is going to have to respond to what North Korea is doing. So, one, go to Donald Trump, because what Donald Trump will backpedal, right? He'll say that he didn't backpedal, but he has backpedaled.
Sure.
He's toned it down when I'm sure someone has gotten in his ear. You know, Mattis has gotten on the phone and said, hey, what is your problem, right? Tone it down. He will. I can get him to do that. But if we want to really put pressure on North Korea to stop acting like assholes, then they need to feel pain, right? You're saying, oh, he's so crazy and we don't know what he's going to do. He's going to launch missiles. What is the one thing he likes to do? What does he like to do, Kim Jong-un? You know what he likes to do? He likes to be alive. He likes to be alive. And so this even like this whole thing, well, if he takes out Tokyo, we lose. Well, we do, but he loses more because he won't be here anymore.
And that's why I bring up the reality button thing. Does he believe he is Xerxes? Does he believe?
I think you're just taking that too far.
Because what?
He's seen people die. He's seen his father die. I don't think that he's that delusional. Right? I don't think he's that delusional.
Okay.
Right? I mean, I think it's...
I don't know. That's my point. I don't know. I don't know if he truly believes...
I also can't... Like, here's the thing. If I'm sitting in a chair in Washington, D.C., at the Pentagon or at the White House, I can't think like that. I can't think, oh, well, this guy thinks he's a deity and he thinks he can't be touched. What can he... No. You have to approach it as if he has an actual strategy. You have to assume that he actually has enough sense and the people around him have enough sense to have a strategy, good or bad, right? And whatever their strategy is, it's not good from a North Korean standpoint.
That I agree with. It's not good no matter what. I guess maybe, I mean, if you think I'm overstating the possibility of pure delusion, all right, I mean, we'll disagree. But, and I'm not even saying I believe it. I'm just concerned about it because if you literally believe you cannot be harmed, which this guy might. When you're taking on somebody who is literally not functioning with the reality parameters of the rest of the world, that's hard to do. You can't predict them. You can't, you know, you're right. If he launches the missile attack that I'm concerned about, he loses. But even if it's 10% successful, we lose two. Not as badly as him. He's done. But I'm not happy with that as an outcome. And I don't know what the solution is to prevent it. I mean,
you can't, like, it's not about being happy with an outcome.
Okay.
It can't be. This is, I mean, you're talking about a wartime scenario. You're not going to be happy with the outcome.
The likes of which are almost ancient in mentality, right? I mean, you're literally talking, and you're getting annoyed with me bringing up Xerxes, but that's what I'm thinking. Like, does this guy really have that little reality? I want to move on, but I want to ask you a question to close. If he fires missiles at Guam, and they are, according to him, he's going to shoot missiles near Guam, but not to hurt anybody, just to test things. That's the ultimate provocation, right? You're saying, here's me showing I can fuck with you. How do you handle that?
I go to Russia and say, you have to turn the valve off.
I'm sorry, China.
I go to China and say, you have to turn the valve off. No oil, no gas, no food, nothing. Turn it off. All of it.
Okay.
Right. I don't give a shit about him being a deity or Xerxes or anything else. Turn it all off.
And then that takes, weeks or months to...
Yes.
To clamp stop down, the right?
Ships. Not a single ship, not a plane, nothing.
All right. So
nothing
then,
gets
so,
in.
So then ships that leave North Korean ports, do you blockade in North Korea?
Absolutely.
So you
all
literally
of it.
So you literally,
isolate them.
Land and sea, you shut them down and
shut
say
them down.
Your resources are,
you are
stopped now.
Dunzo.
I mean, on the peninsula side to the south, you've got the demilitarized zone. That's pretty easy to monitor. It's being monitored constantly. The China border, that's a little tougher. The sea, we could literally put vessels in the Korean Sea and say, can't come through here.
Yep.
I mean, I'm not a military strategist.
And once you do that, you're not like having ships that close. You're able to monitor. You know when they're going to launch. You have like everyone is already positioning counterstrike. Like they're already putting counterstrike measures in place for in case of any sort of a launch. The U.S. has been testing this for the last 6 to 8 months. Russia's already doing the same thing. China's already doing the same thing. They're prepared for it. And I think the next step is, if North Korea continues to go down this path and they launch something closer to Guam than they already done, then I think that is the move. Now, getting China on board to do it is a whole nother conversation, because China has multiple reasons why they haven't done it to this point. Because I firmly believe that once you choke off their supply of everything, then all this goes away. I get you think that he think he can't be touched, and that's where we disagree.
Maybe, and I guess the question, next question is,
you don't have food or gas, so what are you going to do? You're going to launch a missile because you think that's a good idea?
And do you? I mean, if the North Korean regime has the foresight to say we need strategic reserves and we can last 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, whatever, that changes the game.
No, it doesn't.
Why not? 6 months. A lot of bad shit can happen in 6 months.
Listen, that's fine. You have strategic reserves. We'll wait.
All right. I mean, North Korea.
You're not really offering us much. It's not a big loss.
It's no loss to us as an economic force.
You cut them off and you don't do any. There's no other aggressive move. You cut them off. You surround them. Say nothing's coming in. Nothing's getting out. Do what you got to do.
I understand what you're saying. I'm concerned.
That's why you don't get to sit in that chair.
What's that?
That's why you don't get to sit in that chair.
True.
That's why you don't. That's
you don't either.
I don't want to.
About your chair. I don't either.
I don't want to.
I don't feel qualified. I'm just saying it's a very difficult situation because you don't know what you're dealing with.
You're not because you couldn't get into Harvard.
Fuck you. All right, moving on. So speaking of other universities I can't stand, the University of Virginia is in Charlottesville, Virginia, and I had an issue with a couple guys from UVA over the course of my life and West Virginia lost to University of Virginia and the something or other Tire Bowl.
Wait, what the fuck just happened here? What are you talking about?
To Charlottesville, which is where the University of Virginia is.
Okay.
Because we need to get out of the North Korea thing.
Fair.
And I don't like Harvard because I didn't get into Harvard.
Right.
I don't like UVA because I've had some issues with UVA folks. And right now we've got
fucking grudges by Jim.
Grudges by, I don't let go easily. Anyway, so Charlottesville, Virginia right now has
they're in a bad spot, man.
They do. They are. And it's a small town, a relatively small town. Mm-hmm. And they had a demonstration by what was officially called? Was it a white supremacist?
They were white march? Nationalists.
White nationalists. That's a great expression. It's actually kind of funny because white nationalists are talking about this nation, which only became white because of invasion.
Right.
I mean, I'm not trying to be like, you know, self flogging white guy or whatever, but we do have a little bit of explaining to do in that regard. So white nationalists had a march. It was met with protests. We never had a death. It took Donald Trump several hours to speak out about it. Melania sent out a relatively canned but proper statement about, you know, violence doesn't solve anything and we need to be one America. Trump finally spoke out, and when he spoke out, he basically said that this is unacceptable, we don't need this, this doesn't make it better. But he didn't he said, like, on many sides. Okay, what are the other sides in this particular case there? Because I found that a bit off-putting.
Yeah, so, okay. I'm not sure why we directed this at Trump, to be honest with you. Honestly, right. Like, okay, he had a delayed response. We're well aware of his issues and who he surrounds himself with. My concerns are the actual event itself. It's Charlottesville, Virginia. That's the where.
Right.
Today, Saturday, August, whatever today is. 12th?
12th, yes.
That's the when. And the what is, you had white nationalists protesting or
marching.
Marching, right?
Showing strength and
right.
Solidarity.
We're white,
whatever,
right, proud, right. And whatever being a white nationalist means. There were counter-protesters. Counter-protesters that were not white nationalists, right? That were about inclusion and, you know, probably a little progressive. And you don't necessarily need to be a progressive to be against, you know, white nationalists, right? I mean, you could be a member of the Republican Party or a conservative and just be like, I'm not comfortable with that. Go out and march. I don't know. It could happen. And I'm not sure what happened, like, in terms of the specific demographics. But the two groups did not vibe well.
Shockingly.
It started shouting, and I kind of monitor it. I put some info out on our Twitter and our Facebook page about it. And then it went from shouting to physical altercations to someone from the white nationalist group allegedly someone from the white nationalist group drove a car into the not white nationalist group, and someone ended up dead.
Yeah.
And that's an incredibly, sad and depressing and just kind of gut-wrenching situation. But the bigger issue here is, one, the comfortability of the white nationalist group to say, you know what, we're going to come out, we're going to have a march. Now, you and I are all about free speech.
Yeah.
Right? We say some things on here that, kind of push the limits, push the envelope about people we talk about, the different topics that we talk about, some of our guests that we've talked to. And so we embrace free speech. I may not like what white nationalists talk about or what they're about, but I can't prevent them from saying what they want to say. Right? Can't censor. But the fact that this ended in violence, it ended with a death, like that's something that's worth talking about. Like Donald Trump's response, it matters because who the group was, the white nationalists, he doesn't come out and say anything to distance himself, his administration, from that with accusations, knowing that Steve Bannon is his chief strategist, right? Which is a concern. So he doesn't come out. He doesn't say anything right away. He's late to the party, and we end up we have a death here. And so, on that aspect, there's plenty. I'm not saying there's not a reason to talk about it, but we need to talk about the actual event itself, right?
I guess here's why I threw Trump into the mix, because I think a big part of why this is where it is because of the empowerment he gave to that mentality throughout his campaign and through his presidency, right? He made the white nationalist group his boys, his crowd, that he did nothing to discourage that xenophobic white nationalist mentality.
This is what I'll say. I don't disagree with that, but I don't put this at the all on Trump.
I agree. Not
I
all.
Put a I put not a all. Large a large percentage of this on Fox News, Breitbart, on Richard Spencer of the alt right, like the leader of the alt right movement. They put a lot of work into riling these people up. Alex Jones
completely agree with
InfoWars and Rush Limbaugh. They did this. Okay,
100% agreed.
Trump just
cashed in on it.
Trump cashed in on it, right? Trump's now the president, and Trump's not doing anything to fight it. But listen, this idea of white nationalist groups, Ku Klux Klan members, Aryan Nation people saying, the white victim card, all of it. That Trump was able to use that to his advantage, but by no means is that something that started because of Trump. That was in the works before Trump. That was in the works as a pushback against Obama. That was in the works as a pushback against the Democratic Party moving to a more progressive front, right? Like, you had Bernie Sanders, and he's going left, right? And he's saying all free college and gay and lesbians and all this other stuff, right? Like, he's siding with all these different groups. And so there was an opportunity there in conservative media, and you've talked about this, about why they're dangerous, why conservative media is dangerous. And so this is where I'm agreeing with you on that front. They used that and fueled it, right? There was an underlying sentiment. There was frustration, anger, rage building. And
victim mentality.
And they used it and brought it to the surface. And, you could go right down the dial. Any conservative that you listen to, right? That's on the Patriot Network, Rush Limbaugh, you know, WTAM 1100, you know, with Chivasano or whoever you're listening to. They all use the same talking points. One, no show can go by without saying Obama has ruined the country. Obamacare, Obama, all of it, terrible, bad, right? Like, there's no conservative show that you can listen to at any point in time where they don't reference how bad Obama was for the country, right? Like, that's the main talking point. Obama's bad, Obamacare is bad, Obama's bad, right?
I mean, the stuff you're talking about predates Obama, though, right? It was Clinton was bad, Clinton was awful before that.
But
you're right. Obama put... It got pushed to another level because of Obama.
Right?
Obama so brought
then,
it to the...
So then, but Obama said, listen, I'm going to embrace gays. I'm going to embrace... Hey, black males and criminals. And felt like, hey, I'm going to embrace you guys, right? Like, everyone's pushed you guys to the side, so I'm going to embrace you, right? And so, because he did that, then that's... if he's embracing the gays, and he's embracing these Negroes who end up in jail, then what about me? What about me? Obama, you're leaving me out in the cold, right? It is that simple, right? Because think about the talking points. Think about the things that people use to say Obama left the white middle class, out in the cold, right? Because Obama paid attention to what happened to Trayvon Martin, because Obama paid attention to what was going on in Ferguson, and he didn't send in an army and just start shooting black people left and right. And because if the police did something wrong, he called them out for doing something wrong. He didn't just blindly follow them just for no good goddamn reason. Then that's apparently bad leadership, right? Like, just acknowledging what's happening to your citizenry it didn't work for everybody. Like, because he was for everybody, that didn't work for everybody.
All right, so I'm not going to disagree with anything you just said. I will say that the reason I put the show in the light on the Trump side is right now the people we're talking about feel emboldened by we got rid of Obama. We've talked about this on the show many times. Everything, not everything, but many things in the Trump agenda and the Trump administration have been a fuck you to Obama, right? We're pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord. We're pulling out of this. We're reversing Obamacare. We're going to repeal Obamacare and replace it. Oh, we can't repeal and replace. Let's just repeal. It's all been just a fuck you to the previous administration. And he's still going on campaign rallies and essentially saying fuck you to Obama, who, to his credit, has been presidential and largely stayed out of the fray.
Presidential? My man. Obama?
Yeah.
Barry? Living a life. He is living the life. You look at everything he's doing, it's just like... I don't even know
what he's doing. What is he doing?
Whatever he wants. Whatever he wants. He signed a ridiculous book deal, right? Like, his book deal is worth like $25 million, which is crazy.
He's golfing every day. Oh, wait, no, that's nope. Trump. That's
no,
Trump.
He's not.
No, that's Trump. Oh, well. Let me get my snarky shit in, please. Because Trump, it annoys me that Trump was like, Obama just cares about golf. He's on vacation all the time. Oh, Trump is currently on a 17-day vacation and playing golf more than Obama did in whatever.
Bitch, you petty.
I'm petty, fine. Whatever.
Bitch, you petty.
Yeah, you know, it does. But it
listen, I know, it grinds your gears. But Obama, I'm just saying, living the life. Very jealous. Which, you know what? Kind of the way it should
all right,
be for
so
a
so if you could hang out with Obama or Putin right now, who would it be?
Well, it's Obama. Listen.
Okay.
The thing with Putin is...
You want to party with Putin.
I need a lot of insurance.
A lot of protection.
And protections.
Yes, okay, fair
if
enough.
I'm partying with Putin, right? I mean, drinking vodka, it's
your job to hold the bear.
You know, drinking vodka with taking some onion after it, and that sounds like a really nice time, but I just feel like I'd probably have a really... good time and then end up dead. So Putin is good in theory. Obama is good in theory and real life.
All right.
Anyway, but again, I still think that there's a disconnect though, because you're saying all these people are empowered by Trump. I think even if Hillary would have won or Bernie would have won, these same groups would still have that same level of empowerment because your Breitbarts, your Rush Limbaughs, they would crank it up even more, right? You got to revolt. There's got to be a revolution, right? You have to revolt against Hillary. You have to revolt against the left and the progressive values. They're ruining our country, right? Like, they want it again. It's just more
of... All right, let me ask you this.
It'd be more of Obama, right? Like, she's just more of Obama. We can't let it happen. I still think you would see this.
So let me ask this. Would the counter protest be lesser if a Democrat was in the White House?
No.
I think it would. I think it's been largely ineffectual.
Because if Hillary would have won, you still have your factions of the left and the Democratic Party, right? And if Hillary would have won, I think you still would have had your burning people who would have been pissed off. But to your point about the protests, about white nationalists marching in Charlottesville, Virginia, I think that happens no matter who's elected, and I think it ends the same no matter who's elected.
See, I think the dynamics change. I think the protesters right now, the marchers, the white nationalist marchers.
You believe that this is driven by who's in office. It's not.
I do.
These people are not driven by who's in office. These people are driven by the people that they are listening to. The people that they
are listening to are guided by who's in office. No.
No.
Oh, okay.
Rush Limbaugh's not guided by who's in office.
Oh, come on.
Rush Limbaugh
didn't respond to Obama being in office.
Okay.
Come on.
But if you take Obama out, right? Obama's gone, and you would have put Hillary in. Does Rush Limbaugh's does it change anything for him?
If you take Donald Trump out of office, and Rush Limbaugh changes, and Alex Jones changes. Oh, come on. Because it's harder for them. It's harder for Alex Jones. It's harder for Alex Jones to say...
If you take Donald Trump out of office right now and you insert any Democrat, if you insert Hillary Clinton, you think that their volume goes down? Are you insane?
That's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying.
Their volume goes up. Exactly. Their message gets more aggressive.
That's... All right, we're actually agreeing. We're just fighting to do it.
I don't know.
Because that's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay.
Right now... The Alex Jones crowd, who thrives on the enemy in the White House, can't point to the enemy in the White House because they can't call it the enemy.
Yeah, they can.
Trump's the enemy of Alex Jones?
Right now, listen, if you pay attention, that wasn't an attack on you.
Well, that's fine.
But what I'm saying is, if you listen, what has Trump done since he's been in the White House?
Not a hell of a lot.
Right? And... Everybody's pissed about it, right?
True.
Democrats and the left are pissed because he said things, right? And that's where, you know me, I get annoyed with the Democrats and the left because you say any one thing and they lose their goddamn minds, right? But he said stuff, so they're pissed off, right? The conservatives, the base, the people who put him in office, we're going to come up on a year of the election in November, and he hasn't gotten anything done. Obamacare was supposed to be repealed on day one. Right, we're at day 250, and we got nothing. Right, like it's not repeal, it's not replaced, and it's not even repealed. Right, they're pissed about it. Right, the only thing, like, we don't have a wall that's built. We don't have, the only thing that he can point to is that immigration is down, illegal immigration is down, and that's a.
And he's still playing the Neil Gorsuch card.
That's a little bit of a. That's a little okay, like.
I'm with you.
He does play it, but I mean, it's just like, all right, well, there was an open spot, and
you nominated someone who was qualified.
And you nominated someone who was qualified, and they got in. I mean, like, if you're
I'm just saying that he's still hanging his hat on that. So your point was he hasn't accomplished shit. The fact that he's still saying, look what I did, you're right.
If his biggest thing is that he's got Neil Gorsuch in, and by the way, what has Neil Gorsuch done for you to this point? Right? Yeah, I mean, in terms of right, I mean, even on your ban, right? Like your ban that you put in that is kind of
travel in place, ban that
your
wasn't travel a travel ban, ban right?
It's not a travel ban. It's kind of in place. It's kind of not in place. Like he hasn't really done much of anything. So his base is pissed at him. So what I'm saying is, I listen to this shit. I listen to Breitbart. I listen to Alex Jones, and. They've called him out. They've called the administration out. People are pissed. They're pissed at him. They're not moving left. They're going further right, right? And there's like, he's not carrying the message. And if he's not going to carry the message, then I'll carry the goddamn message, right? Like, it's...
I've come across a lot of people who are pissed, but not at him. So they're pissed when they're saying, but it's not his fault. It's Mitch McConnell. It's John McCain. It's the Democrats.
Sure.
It's Barack Obama. Sure. Very. What I've been hearing is that 35-38% of Trump hardcore has just dug in deeper and deeper and has not budged or acknowledged.
That's not what we're talking about,
though. Okay. Why?
That's not what we're talking about.
Well, to me, all right, that's what I was talking about, just because I think the people who are saying, when I'm saying the emboldened white nationalist crowd, that's who I'm talking about.
That's not Trump's base. It's not all Trump's right. base.
What, really?
It's not. It's not. They're the fringe. They're on the outside ring. They're not.
All right, what percentage of that crowd is pro-Trump? And how pro-Trump are they?
100%.
100%. But they're 5%. If you're saying they're 5% of the, or 2%.
Right.
Whatever. I mean, but they're a really entrenched 2%, right?
But that doesn't matter. Okay. They're still only 2%, if that. They're like the white nationalists, the KKK, the white supremacists, the alt-right types. They're really loud and they're really good at social media. Small percentage. Sorry.
All right.
They're a small percentage. That's why this doesn't change. Right, like that's why the situation in Charlottesville doesn't change, and that's where you're off, right? Like because that situation doesn't change whether it's Hillary or Trump, and I guarantee you it still happens if it's Hillary. It probably happens more frequently in other places as a revolt against Hillary, right? Like that's where the difference.
I don't disagree there,
right? I mean, like,
I guess that's where we're maybe tripping over each other. Is I'm saying that
that's
group,
you fucking up.
What's that?
That's you fucking up, not me.
All right. You want to wrap up? We're at an hour. Do you want to wrap this up and then do more in a second show?
I do want to wrap this up, but I want to make sure we do it the right way. I need you to understand what's happening here, right? Like, so we can wrap it up. We'll end the show on this topic, and then we'll come back and talk about Zeke Elliott, Game of Thrones. I think there's some other random shit
Alex
in there.
Alex Jones supplements.
Absolutely.
That'll be much more fun to talk about with more whiskey.
But I do need you to come around on this. I do need you to understand that what's happening, this whole thing with white supremacists, white nationalism, all of that, no matter who was in office, this rise was coming. Okay? It was coming. You could feel it. You can feel it. You could see it. It was something that was actually, you could touch it in the air, right? And the reason why, a lot of it is in response to Barack Obama. Not so much because Barack Obama was a black president, but it was who and what, it was what Obama did as president, right? I don't believe was bad, but a lot of people took offense to what he did because Obama related to people who looked like him.
Okay, let me come back at you and say, if you're saying that the Obama presidency fueled a lot of this, and if you're saying that the backlash to this is Obama, because of the right-wing media, because of the Limbaughs and Alex Joneses, and because these people were pushed into a corner and told, you're victims, told, you know, you are abused by the government, and this backlash occurred during and then was amplified by the absence of Obama in office, I completely agree.
Yes, that is exactly what I'm saying.
All right, you're right.
That is exactly what I'm saying.
No doubt.
And so, like, yes, Trump and Steve Bannon in the White House aren't going to quiet that noise. But my argument is that even if Hillary had won, you would still have, they wouldn't quiet down or back down. That would actually, sure, I guarantee you, I think that it would be louder. I think it would be worse because what Rush Limbaugh, Breitbart, your favorite dude, Wilco, they would all say, oh, we're under attack. I mean, they're already
saying that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're saying they're under attack right now by the progressive left wing and the mainstream media, and they've got the president, they've got Congress, they've got the Senate, they've got the majority of the Supreme Court, right? They've got the majority of governors in the United States, and they're still under attack, right?
The
country is mostly white people, right? 60% of the fucking country is white people, and they're still under attack, right? They're still under attack. They're still losing. So... They're still victims, right? They're still victims, but they're victims, and according to Will Call, they're losing, right? Like, you're losing at every front. You're losing. So if that's the case, with all that control, can you imagine what they would be saying and what they would be telling their listeners and the people who pay attention to them and take their word as gospel?
Yes, no doubt.
Can you imagine what that message would be if Hillary had won? And you have Hillary Clinton and her chief strategist, who I'm assuming would be Uma Aberdeen.
Okay.
Right?
Probably.
Can you imagine what they would be saying in that scenario? And then how their listeners and their supporters would be reacting. Right? It wouldn't be, we lost.
Completely agree on that point. All right. So, I think we're actually kind of on the same page. We just... turn it to an argument rather than
an argument.
Whatever. No, it's an argument. It's fine. I'm fine with arguing. I just
you were arguing with me, and I don't know why.
I feel like you're arguing with me, and I don't know why. So
that's the white guy controlling you.
What's that?
That's the white guy controlling stuff.
Okay. Yes, I'm part of the white oppression. But in all seriousness, I agree with what you're saying, that the anger has been stoked for years. It's come to a head. What I'm putting on Trump is, to me, that feels like they've been validated to a degree, and they feel like, finally, we've got our guy. Finally, we've got a guy who understands how, white males in America have been oppressed. And while I think it's a bullshit argument, I think that's how these people think. And I think their protests are that much more bold. And the counter protests have been fueled by what they've seen in reverse. How, whether Hillary should have been the person or not, the quote unquote resist at all costs mentality has been everywhere since Trump got elected. And now anytime, and this goes kind of back to something we've talked about in the past, where there's times to resist. There's times to protest. And this is one of them. But when you have a protest that is for, protesting against the Neil Gorsuch nomination, you are going to lose. The law, the legal, whatever. And I know I'm blurring political protests in the system versus people marching the streets. But I think you get my point that, right. There's times to resist. There's times to fight. And there's times to accept what the system gives us. And I think the protest for the sake of protest, even if this is, and I do believe this is, one of the times to do it, it gets diminished by the bad choice protests. Fair enough?
Yeah, no, you're right. Sure.
Eloquent in its brevity. All right. We're Whiskey Congress. Thank you very much, Steve. Good talking to you. Good seeing you, man. I'm enjoying the whiskey. The Cleveland whiskey bottle is officially done.
Dunzo.
We'll move to Scotch next time. We are whiskeycongress.com, at Whiskey Congress on all social media.
We're
going
to have to find a whiskey replacement for the, because we're going to do another show here. But
anyway. All right. Yeah, we'll figure that out. All right, man. Later.
Thanks.
Out. Oh.